Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Tiempo, tiempo. Mediodía estancado entre relentes.
Dimple, dimple. Mint UBS Bank Island to entice.
Bomba aburrida del cuartel la chica. Tiempo, 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 tiempo.
Bone bubble lead on what they let chic. Dimple D and both he and opium will.
I'm sorry, it's just so ridiculous sometimes, you know? Welcome to Rayambulante Unscripted, a new way to listen to Latin America, part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Today, a little poetry, or something like that. So what you just heard is a reading of Tiempo Tiempo by Peruvian poet Cesar Vallejo after going through a digital translation process. The voice you heard reading that sort of unintelligible English language version is poet, translator, and scholar Urayoan Noel. Urayoan is up to something strange here. Part tribute, part reimagining, part wholesale transformation. It's something new happening here, a reshaping of one of the most canonical poetic voices in the Spanish language. Based in the Bronx, alternating between English and Spanish, New York and Puerto Rico, the printed word and the spoken word, Noel is interested in what he refers to as the stateless aesthetic. So I began, of course, by asking him about his roots.
Well, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, but in a bilingual household. So I grew up speaking English and Spanish at home. And that was definitely formative in terms of my future endeavors as a poet and a scholar.
You talk a little bit more about how that affected your work?
Well, my father is American, right? A white man from California, and my mother is Puerto Rican, born and raised in Puerto Rico. One distinctive feature, I guess, of my background is that they traded places sometimes, so I would speak sometimes also English with my mom and Spanish with my dad, both of them with colorfully accented English and Spanish respectively. Something that made me aware of the fact that there isn't, say, one English and one Spanish, but multiple, right, variants of both and of all languages for that matter. So yeah, my dad still speaks, you know, totally Puerto Rican Spanish, right, but with his English-speaking accent, and my mom the same. She's lived in Florida for over 20 years now. But then speaks, slightly southern inflected English with her Puerto Rican accent. So I think actually I use both of their linguistic quirks as inspiration for my performance poetry persona. So I might have moments when I say, ahora vamos a leer en inglés, right? And right now I am going to read in Spanish. Yes. So in a way, it was clear to me from an early age that those two counted as English and Spanish, right? That that purists had no idea what they were talking about, and that perhaps the future, right, of cross-cultural communication, right, might be precisely in those kinds of impure tongues.
So you took, you know, one of the iconic and sort of recognized masters and groundbreaking poets of the 20th century, Cesar Vallejo, and put him through this digital translation process. Talk to me about how that came about and, the roots of that project.
Well, I was definitely interested in the kinds of what I call homophonic translation, right? So sound-based as opposed to meaning-based translations. But I thought, okay, what could I do differently, right? And I realized that part of that had to do with the kinds of accents, right? The kinds of soundings, right? The kinds of culturally specific, language experiences, right? That I could bring to bear. So one thing that I did as I read Trilce, right, into the software that was programmed for English as opposed to Spanish, was vary my accent, right? So sometimes I would read this, right, with one or another of my parents' accents, yes, and it would generate different kinds of translations. In a way, it was recovering Vallejo as a poet of the popular tongue, right, which I think he is if you look at the scope of his work, right? But Trilce is such a weird book, right? It's still one of maybe the weirdest book of Latin American poetry, right? Going on 100 years since its original publication, right? But it was important to me to say, okay, Vallejo was experimenting, but his experimenting was also rooted in a serious preoccupation, right, with language, and not just poetic language, but everyday language as well. So in a way, defamiliarizing his already unfamiliar language, right, through this homophonic process was a way of returning him to the vernacular, right?
Do you remember the first time you encountered Trilce, and can you tell me how you responded?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first time I read Trilce, I must have been, I don't know, in my teenager, certainly, maybe 15, I'm guessing. I had no idea what was going on. But I was struck by the power of some lines that even with within the difficulty of the language, there were these beautiful, beautiful resonant images. There's one of, I don't know, the Nyandu, right? I didn't even know what a Nyandu was. I had to look it up, right? The South American bird, right? So there's these beautifully evocative images and passages buried within this very intimidating and very difficult, right, textual apparatus. But I think I never lost that sense of how it mixed, right, beauty and lyric transcendence, right, with a kind of challenging poetics of difficulty, right, almost formal defiance, right, to what poetry is and could be. And I think that inspires me to this day.
Did you feel as you were doing it that you were paying tribute? Or was there ever a translation that came back and you were like, no, this is mockery. I can't publish this. I can't do this to El Maestro Vallejo.
Yeah, well, I think that there are two ways to think about what I'm doing here. One is as a parody, but another is as, in a way, using Vallejo to parody the limitations, right, of this software, right, Web 2.0 language, right, with its focus on the technocratic, with its focus on the utilitarian, with its focus on, right, the values of the business world, right, all the stuff that I see Vallejo as opposing, right, in his poetry. So I think it's both. I think whenever you you experiment with parody, and this is in a sense can be read as a large parody of Vallejo. Parody, I think, is always homage, right, homage, but it's always critique as well, right? So in a way, I'm critiquing the very idea of Vallejo's poetry. In other words, Trilce is an impossible book, right? But it's also homage, right? Oh my God, what a beautifully necessary, impossible book, right, that keeps inspiring us all this time afterwards.
Absolutely. Let's read number 12, and let's do this like you suggested, line by line, yeah? Escapo de una finta, pelusa a pelusa.
Is Coppel doing nothing that they will stop at US to?
Un proyectil que no sé dónde irá a caer.
Project the Indo-Sid loan date, Act 1.
Incertidumbre, tramonto, cervical coyuntura.
Incident the only dumb, although said of the guy, look, wooden Buddha.
Chasquido de moscón que muere.
Just kill the most, going game way to.
A mitad de su vuelo y cae a tierra.
A meet at this window, each guy at the other.
¿Qué dice ahora, Newton?
Kinesiology with them.
Pero, naturalmente, vosotros sois hijos.
The ago not to resume in the postal costly sequence.
Incertidumbre, talones que no giran.
Means at the only battle an Eskimo heat in.
Carilla en nudo, fabrida.
Got each and the little of either.
Cinco espinas por un lado.
See what's been a sport without will.
Y cinco por el otro, chit. Ya sale.
Easy local portal to kick aside.
What I love about this translation is that it even gets the English words wrong. Like if I would have thought that it would have gotten Newton right, you know? It's impossible to predict. You know, you look at it and I can try to think of the words that it would sound like in English, but the software is either more creative than me or alternatively, you know, less skilled than me, right? Doesn't even get Newton right.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how the software does what it does, I'm not an expert. I've asked informally certain people who are, and from what they tell me, and your listeners can correct us if that's not the case, it seems that the software does not just do straight up word for word equivalence. It also looks at patterns. So it'll, you know, when you read a sentence, it'll look at how, right, the totality, right, how one sound relates to the next in deciding which alternatives to go with, right? That's my sense. And so that's kind of interesting, the fact that maybe there is there's a project built into the software, right, of a certain kind of broader translation.
Yeah, and how important is the digital aspect of it? Because it seems to me like that's very of the moment, and, you know, was that important to you?
Sure, sure. I mean, in terms of the digital, I become more and more focused on streamlining the operation and using my smartphone. So in the more recent work, I've been looking to, say, app-generated poetry, right, and app-generated kinds of performance and translation, for example. So the idea is somehow to bring the experience of poetry closer to the ways in which we are consuming pretty much everything now, right? So in that sense, I don't see the digital as some esoteric right element that I'm bringing to poetry. I think I'm bringing poetry to the world in which many of us, or at least those of us lucky enough, right, to live in societies where we can afford things like smartphones, right, are now consuming the bulk of our culture, right? So to break down the idea that there is a high poetry culture and then the culture of apps or smartphones, and thinking, again, what would happen if we threw those two things together?
How do audiences respond? I mean, you performed these. I saw you perform them in Puerto Rico, and there was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of, I think, surprise. But you know, tell me about it. Like, how do people respond?
I think there's humor. There's also maybe a kind of shock and unease, right? Also confusion. A lot of folks really don't understand the procedure, right? Even after they've seen the performance, so it becomes a kind of teachable moment. But I think my favorite part of doing this is my sense that somehow I am summoning a ghost somehow, right? That there's a kind of haunted nature to both Vallejo's language and to this homophonic, right, software-generated language that I find really moving somehow.
So you put him through this digital translation process, you know, with your smartphone and read him homophonically in English. What do you learn about Vallejo?
Well, I think in doing this homophonic translation of Vallejo, I realized how firmly rooted his work is in right in his culture and in his landscape, right? And I think that's also partly a satire, right, on how this kind of voice recognition software works, right? Even more so if you do this on a smartphone. I don't know if you noticed, but it seems like the software picks up on a lot of place names, but they're all kind of place names that would have been in the global headlines over the past couple of decades, right? So we might get Libya, right? But we really won't get Peru a lot, right? So it does seem that, you know, even when these are non-US, right, non-European, right, non-Western, let's say, references, they somehow get tokened into this largely, right, a corporatist translation. They're still references that would be legible because we recognize them from the news, right? So whereas the software generates a kind of overriding global sameness, right, through all these digital references, Vallejo insists on this cultural specificity and materiality and place. And I thought, in a way, it was a testament to how powerful his work is, right? It can't be universally translated into the language of global capital of Web 2.0, right? It survives despite our best efforts.
Urayuan Noel's books of poetry include High Density Politics, The Cool Logic, La Lógica Cool, and Borinquen. His new book will be published this year is called Invisible Movement, New Eurecan Poetry from 60s to Slam. This interview was produced by Silvia Viñas. Special thanks to program associate Lori Ignacio and production intern Diana Buendia. The Radio Ambulante team includes Martina Castro, Camila Segura, Luis Treyes, and David Pastor. Carolina Guerrero is executive director. Thanks also to Productora Sónica in Bogotá. Radio Ambulante Unscripted is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Radio Ambulante tells the stories of Latin America. To hear more, visit our website, radioambulante.org. There you'll find links to our stories in Spanish and more content in English too. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.